Let's get it on Wrestling Observer Live, usually featuring Brian Alvarez. I'm Mike Sempervive here filling in with you. Thank you so much for joining me. We are with you no matter who is in this chair every single day, Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 Pacific, 10 UTC. During the week, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, 7 UTC. First run replays of those shows air at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 West, and midnight UTC. And on Saturdays, you can listen to Jim Valley's Wrestling Observer Live at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, 5 UTC. For those of you listening internationally, tune in, iHeart, American Forces Radio, over-the-air affiliates, sportsbyline.com, SiriusXM, or via podcast, however you're listening to me right now. Again, I want to thank you so much for dropping in. As I noted, I am all alone today. Brian cannot be with us. As many of you know, he is in Ledyard, Connecticut, wrestling at the Foxwoods Casino for Beyond Wrestling's Americanrana event. He teamed with former MLW champion and UFC fighter Filthy Tom Lawler against Thomas Santel and Nick Gage. So I will be holding it down until he returns. Because he is facing off against Nick Gage, I will also amend that to say if he is able to return. It has been a very busy weekend. A three-match WWE Network special, Smackville, from Nashville, Tennessee, took place. There's been two big G1 Climax shows for New Japan Pro Wrestling. There's UFC 240, Holloway against Edgar. Two important boxing cards on Showtime. A slew of independent and other pro wrestling shows taking place all over the world. We had women from Sendai performing in the UK. There was PWG in Southern California. Stuff all over the place. Except for Wrestle Circus. They were supposed to run tonight in Austin, Texas. And if I get a chance today, I'll let you know what happened with them. We had inductees into the Tragos Thez Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame at Waterloo, Iowa on Saturday night. We got MLW creating ties with Pro Wrestling Noah. There was a fun Triple Crown title defense by Kento Miyahara this morning against Zeus. We got news on DDT's Konosuke Takeshita, a preview of Monday Night's Raw, and so much more. We'll get it all started after the break. Keep it tuned right here. I'm Mike Sempervive, Wrestling Observer Live. Welcome back to the show. This is Brian Alvarez's Wrestling Observer Live. Yep, it's his show. He's going to tell you that every chance he gets. I am Mike Sempervive. I'm usually relegated to the side chick chair, but got the whole Soul Train scramble board in front of me now. Time to make magic. Brian's going to be back, possibly on Monday afternoon. He dared put some bait on the string earlier on this week, saying that he could be on tonight. We'll wait for him to call in. I doubt that he will. If you want to, you can. 1-800-878-PLAY, 1-800-878-7529. Most likely he's going to be back on Tuesday. For those who are hiding under a rock, including during the first segment, he has reformed the, still to my knowledge, 0-1 Chop and Roll Express Tag Team to face off against Antonio the Promise Thomas, Thomas Santel, and his partner, the uniquely effervescent Nick Gage. I think that would be that's a way to put it. Many of you have heard Brian's commercial that he's been doing. You know who's losing his hair? Nick Gage. I wonder if he did any pitching today before the match. If we can hear any screams, actually, too, naturally coming out of Connecticut, we'll find out. But I'm sure we're going to hear all about Brian's adventures when he returns to the program this week. If you can't wait, you can always check his progress on Twitter. There's some videos up there about him totally not being nervous about getting in the ring with Nick Gage. Brian with a Y, Brian Alvarez. If you want to get a hold of me, you can, too, at Sempervive. Sports Byline is at Sports Byline USA. And for all the news in professional wrestling and mixed martial arts, you want to make sure you follow at WONF4W. Been kind of a dumb week. On Thursday, ESPN posted up a story on their site titled, "The Future is Filled with Everything Except Wrestling for CM Punk." Okay, it was written by a longtime mixed martial arts writer, Mark Raimondi. He's very, very good. He talked about Punk's work doing commentary on fighting. He talked about whether he'll fight again in general after the two losses in the UFC that were so high profile, his training at Rufus Sport, how that's going, acting gigs, just all sorts of stuff, including, of course, Punk's upcoming appearance Labor Day weekend at StarCast. That is the Conrad Thompson podcast and convention hustle that he's holding in conjunction with AEW's All Out 2 show, which is all of this is going down in Chicago, which is, of course, Punk's hometown. Early in the story, Raimondi asks him just straight up if he's got any relationship with AEW. And Punk responds bluntly and seemingly with a touch of spiciness. He says, no, I know they like to talk about me a lot. If I text Matt Jackson, hey, have a good show tonight, which I did when they had their big show in Vegas, that somehow turns into Tony Khan telling people he's got a great relationship with me. I've said in the past, I've talked to them, but nothing ever came of anything. That sounds to me like somebody didn't really like appreciate the scrum after Double or Nothing in May, when Tony Khan answered a question about wrestlers that he wanted to start AEW with. And when Punk's name came up, he said, quote, I love Phil. Phil's great. I mean, I have a good relationship with Phil. I think he's awesome. Tony, this is just me as an outsider. Don't call him Phil. Raimondi in the article went on to ask Punk if fans have inflated their hopes or expectations falsely, to which he responded, I think if there's an expectation, it's purely been built by them. My silence to some fans means something. They're trying to read the tea leaves, but there's nothing to read. I even feel like they're talking about it, may feel like I'm putting some sort of negative slant on it, but I'm really not. The fact is, I know they've teased me ad nauseum, and if anybody's going to get mad at me because I don't show up, well then, I don't know what to tell you. It's one of those things that's none of my business. Raimondi followed up with, what do you mean by that? And Punk said, they do videos where they talk about me. They're constantly talking about me in the media. And again, maybe this sounds like I'm badgering them, but I'm not. It's just something that happens. I'm a popular guy to talk about, but I'm not doing interviews talking about them. If people ask me about it, I say, no, I won't be there. So Raimondi follows up, just to be completely clear, there's nothing imminent. Punk goes, the last thing I got a text from Cody Rhodes, or from Cody. And again, I almost don't even know how to reply to them sometimes, because if I reply, they do interviews and are like, oh yeah, I just talked to Punk. I'm kind of damned if I do, damned if I don't. I always think if somebody wants to do business with me, they can come talk to me. Adding texting offers isn't a way to do good business. He went on to say that it was texted through three people and an offer came in. It's like a month ago. Raimondi asked him if it was an offer for All Out. And Punk said it was just a general offer. Never could have done the last one in Vegas because I was in California for CFFC, for which he was doing the announcing for. Now, that was all on Thursday. On Friday, Cody responded to somebody on Twitter who had asked him about offering Punk a contract in person, as he had said that Raimondi reported that texting offers isn't a good look, as said by Punk. Cody tweeted back, I think he was misquoted. I know one of us had met with him in person, and yes, I texted him plenty when we couldn't connect on the actual phone, but not a contracted offer. I wouldn't be surprised if he went back to WWE. Regardless, great wrestler and guy, door is open if he wants it. To which, to put the bow on this, Raimondi, who conducted and transcribed the interview, as he had with thousands and thousands of others over the years, responded to Cody by saying, quote, I promise you he was not misquoted. Oof. Couple things here. Number one, again, don't call him Phil. It's not, especially not in the general public. I mean, you can, but it makes you sound like a troll or a dork or is somebody that's trying to get like way too familiar. So I don't know which one Tony Khan is, but that's kind of small potatoes in the grand scheme of things. Two, if any of this is true, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm showing my age here. But, like, two grown-ass people need to communicate like grown-ass people. You know, every public face that's in power at AEW is at least 34 years old. With the exception of Nick Jackson, who just turned 30 today. So, happy birthday, younger buck. And the guy that they're trying to woo is 41. I know it sucks when you can't get somebody on the phone or directly, but like, I don't know. To me, you don't hire, you don't fire, you don't job interview, you don't quit. You know, almost anything else job related, you don't do that through text. And you don't do it through emails either, for that matter. I think it's stupid. I think it leaves open a lot of room for interpretation and mistakes and error. It's just incredibly annoying. You want to offer him a deal, and if he's ignoring you, then find out who his agent or his lawyer is. He's an athlete, he's an entertainer, and he's been sued. So you know the dude has representation. Send it there. Badger them. Especially if it's as unsolicited as Punk is making it out to be. And it may not be. But that leads me to this anyway, because I heard this morning's Wrestling Observer Radio just before I came on here, and Dave Meltzer made it clear that, quote, a major reporter, unquote, contacted him about Cody saying that Punk may have been misquoted and saying that it was he surely, with the intention, knew it was not misquoted, and basically reached out to Dave and said, you better get your boy. Because you can question ESPN and the relationship with WWE, but like Mark Raimondi has had Dana White talk a lot of nonsense to him over the years, and he's somebody who considers himself a serious journalist. So he's not trying to become Bill Apter or Stu Sachs and like become an intermediary to work in your angles. You know, if you I think he may have been misquoted. Well, maybe you should have took those fingers and instead of, you know, tweeting out anything else, you should have dialed Dave or maybe like gotten a hold of Mark like directly. I don't know. We'll probably get into this a little bit more. I'm sure you have your opinions on it. A lot of stuff to take place this weekend, too, so I want to find out what you watched. 1-800-878-PLAY, 1-800-878-7529. We will be back. Wrestling Observer Live. Back on the show, Mike Semper, BB here with you. Wrestling Observer Live. I'm still annoyed by this. And I know what you're saying. Well, you know, Mike, he didn't reach out to Mark Raimondi or reach out to Dave because, you know, he's working. Or he feels scorned and he just wanted to get that dig into Punk. He'll be going back to WWE. They all do. Muddying the waters to create doubt, which is that quote-unquote major reporter who contacted Dave is saying about Cody. If that's what you're doing, and they think you're doing that, you're going to piss away whatever credibility that you might have. I'm not going to look at ESPN and their relationship with WWE, which has been really laughable. You know, no in-depth reporting or serious issues. There was the whole Coachman thing, especially tied in with Dave. The ESPY Award, you know, all that stuff. But this, you know, different situation here. New guy. And don't use real media to play your storylines. It's stupid. You know, journalism's in a bad enough spot as it is sometimes. And if this is a sleight of hand so that you can get people to believe he's not coming and he is, then just go piss up a rope because you can't have it both ways. You can't, like, wring your hands and cry about the chair wasn't supposed to be gimmicked, you know, over and over again, and then negotiate through, or worse, manipulate unwitting media. And I just, no, especially not the mainstream sports media that you're going to need to rely on, that you're obviously going to want to rely on, that you're obviously going out of your way to say, wow, look at the amount of visibility that we can give you. Look at the amount of transparency that we can give you. We're going to be so accessible. And then you want to go and you're going to lose cred for such a stupid reason? I mean, you're number two. And if you go and act like you're a number two, then you're in the risk of being flushed by people like Mark Raimondi, who is incredibly good at his job. So it kind of took on a life of its own today on my timeline a little bit when I was thinking about the Cody thing and why he tweeted that out there. And then to hear Dave talk about it, and he is making it very clear that he doesn't believe that this is a work from AEW side at all. They want Punk, but Punk has basically ignored them because, and get this, he doesn't really feel any sort of way about wrestling. What a novel concept. A guy that's actually moved on. There's an asterisk to that in that CM Punk has said, you know, he's not bitter with WWE. He has moved on with that part of his life. And who knows, one day you could see CM Punk make an appearance back in the WWE ring, but it's just very difficult to believe considering the lawsuit and everything else down the line. It's not like if Vince McMahon goes, all of CM Punk's ills with WWE go away. He had a lot of ills with Triple H, including not wanting to face Triple H at the WrestleMania where he quit. So I don't think he's going back to WWE. I will safely take that bet against almost anyone. I really, really will. Now, there was actual wrestling that has taken place all weekend long. There was a ton of everything that took place all weekend long. I don't even know really where to begin. Probably with Smackville, just to get that out of the way, the brand new, redesigned WWE Network, which I have not, I am not, believe it or not, as annoyed with the WWE Network switch as I am with the Twitter switch. That has been far more jarring, far more annoying, all that sort of stuff. The network is the network. It is going to take some time, I guess, to see where things repopulate at, like hidden gems, because for an old bastard like me, to see some of that stuff that they've posted up there from 1972 and all these, you know, from Florida or from Dallas and these types of one-offs and things that go up there, Vern Gagne's Vita Vita Medjin, whatever the hell that Gagne Vitality drink was in the 50s, and that infomercial was up there, and I don't think that's up there anymore. And, you know, I'm hoping that stuff comes back. A lot of people were very worried that they had gotten rid of the old vault with all of the old territories in them, but apparently for some people, depending on what device you viewed it on, that stuff has slowly started to repopulate back up there. So I haven't had much of a problem. All of the stuff that was under continue watching has been okay for me. I've only tried it on an iMac and on an iPhone, so God knows if you're doing it on PlayStation or through a Chromecast or something like that. I don't know how you're affected by it at all, but I've made out pretty good, so that's been good. And I watched Smackville last night, and it was an hour long. It was an hour long house show. And I didn't see the Shield reunion. I keep meaning to. I was thinking this morning, it's like, man, did I watch that? And it's like, no, you didn't watch that one. So I'll have to go back and watch that. I assume it's kind of the same thing. They had three matches on this show, and it was just basically the ass end of a house show that had David Otunga out there doing commentary. In fact, it was, I'm trying to think of who else it was. I can't even remember who it was right now, but it doesn't even matter. Bridgestone Arena in Nashville. The first thing that they said on the show was that Finn Balor was not going to be there. He was not cleared for competition. Suffered, quote, an undisclosed injury. So Shinsuke Nakamura comes out, and stupid heel, instead of winning by forfeit, Shinsuke demands that the referee count to 10. Why? He's not there. They've already announced it's official. You can go home. But he demanded they count to 10, which you knew somebody was going to walk out there, and out walked Ali. Ali's athleticism is insane. Mustafa Ali has got ups for days. There was the spot, and it was going to be Nakamura doing a knee, kind of, sort of, off the top rope. That's what they said it was going to be. You know, but essentially, he jumped up in the air, you know, kind of straight up, darted up as if he was going to do a double axe handle. And as he's coming down, Ali jumps up for the drop kick. And he is still rising when that thing makes contact with Nakamura. It looked so good. It looked so, so good. Nakamura ended up getting the win. Ali missed the 630, and he landed on his feet, kind of went over to the other corner. He went to charge Nakamura, who threw him into the second buckle, and Ali went sliding into it. So he actually slid into the corner and smacked his head on the second buckle. It looked really, really good. Kind of ridiculous, but it looked really, really good. Nakamura ended up hitting the Bombaye and got the win there. They followed up with the Samoa Joe promo, and they're always good, about the three-way that's coming up later on, the main event against Kofi Kingston and Dolph Ziggler. And then it was time for Elias to come out. Elias played the guitar, just like a babyface, asked who wanted to walk with him. He played the guitar well, which made him even more of a babyface. And then just to try to turn it back on the people, he complained there was no standing ovation. He bashed Nashville. So he talked to Johnny Cash and said the Titans will never win the Super Bowl. That was all nonsense. And so was this whole friggin' thing. Because it's a house show, you're going to have a match. So it was going to be Elias and Kevin Owens, but like, you couldn't have called an audible for the special presentation. They go through this big, long rigmarole with Elias, the full presentation, and messing with the fans, and God knows how long this thing went on for. And then behind him, after he gets done insulting everybody else, he starts insulting Kevin Owens. And all of a sudden, Owens is standing there behind him. He could take him out if he wanted to, but instead he just continues to stand there. And Elias sees him, and he bails. And it's like, okay, well, we're just going to get Elias coming back in the ring and get laid out again. Nope, that doesn't happen. Owens challenges him to a match. And so they have a match. And Owens wins with a stunner, and it wasn't very good. And I think everybody would have been a hell of a lot happier if he just would have went in there and laid him out. Could have added on some time to that Ali and Mustafa match. Could have added on some time to the main event, which was not bad at all. Dolph Ziggler, Kofi Kingston, Samoa Joe. Old pros. Did a fine job. A yeoman's effort. A house show main event in a three-way. And that was it. And it was relatively underwhelming. But it was content. And you can prepare for more of that. The WWE's investor calls this week. We've seen a redesign to the network. We are going to have a tiered setup to the network. Probably three tiers. A basic free tier that anybody can get. A smaller payment, which may just remain $9.99. And then probably something that's going to be pushing $12.99, $14.99. I'd like to not think this is the case, but maybe as high as $19.99. Which I think is questionable to go higher than an HBO standalone or something like that. But we'll see how that works out. I'll let you know a little bit more about that, as well as a lot of things that are taking place, and hopefully an update from an ENT in Ledyard, Connecticut. Wrestling Observer Live.
You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live with Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to me live right now, Chop and Roll Express in the ring in American Rana. If you are listening to me on replay or on podcast, Brian Alvarez may already be gone, folks. I hate to sound so solemn over it. I hate to use my tragic WWE announcer voice. Things have gotten real. Going to get real here in a minute as soon as Nick Gage is in the ring. Boston Forever. Logan's 50. Filthy had to drag Brian into the ring on his shoulders. Oh, my. That's the Beyond Wrestling. American Rana. But they have done a wonderful job. And we talked to Drew Cordero on this very edition of the show. It's been, what's it been now? About a couple months now since they started. Every Wednesday on independentwrestling.tv, where you can find a ton of different promotions. And boy, Beyond has done an amazing job on its own. There's somebody you should look up if you're in the wrestling business to take an eye on and to try to study and to try to figure out what those guys did right and to try to learn from it. Man, Drew's a great one to reach out to. They've done a hell of a job. And I believe they ran New York yesterday. I'm not sure exactly where, but running in the Foxwoods today up in Connecticut, it was $60, and that was on Saturday to try to get in. It was going to be a lot more than that, I guess. If anything would be available, and considering some of the lines that people, the pictures that they had tweeted out earlier on in the day, I doubt that was the case. But Yeah, amazing. And there's going to be a ton of stuff coming up this week. The Scenic City Invitational, which hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about this week. I'm going to try to reach out to them. It's become a fun Southern independent wrestling tradition. You know, we had the ECWA Super 8 up in Delaware that was incredibly popular, a popular junior heavyweight tournament. Obviously, Bola's Battle of Los Angeles. There have been a ton of different tournaments from over the years, independent tournaments and independent weekends. And Scenic City Invitational in the last couple is certainly joined to that, and you can watch that on IWTV, as well as watching the replay of Beyond Wrestling to see if Brian is going to survive. And a wrestling company that did not survive, Wrestle Circus, they had a show scheduled for today in Austin, Texas, where they run all of their shows. On Thursday, an email was sent out to all of the talent. After a week of silence from the production, about the production that would be coming up, they didn't have any social media interaction. They just basically went blank and went dark, and that was it. And this email that was sent out by Al Leinart, the owner of the company, takes some of the pressures off anybody else, places it all on his shoulders. And once again, Wrestle Circus, which has been shuttered twice before, is now gone again. It actually died in September of 2017 and was dark for about 6 months, and then was dark for over a year before they came back at the beginning of this year, and things just kind of apparently spiraled out of control. They did have a reputation of being, of I don't want to say blowing money, but certainly spending a lot of it when it came to talent, trying to stack up cards that would put them on a place that PWG was at and other indie promotions were working hard towards. You know, AAW, Defy, you know, MLW, you know, a couple of years ago before everything got a little bit more kind of defined with the lines and contracts and all that sort of stuff. It was a little bit more of a free-flowing thing. And we were starting to get supercards everywhere. And we started kind of asking, like, is this going to be like microbrews now? Are we going to have, like, there's going to be microbrews, like, you know, there's craft brews and there's micros, but you're going to need extra definitions because, you know, the small company that's brewing in, you know, Southern Indiana is obviously not going to have the production of, say, a Sam Adams that likes to consider themselves a craft brew. And it was kind of getting that way with independent wrestling. It's like, you know, if you can't afford 10 fly-ins on a Saturday night and competing with the three other shows across the country, major shows that are going to be taking place, like, you know, what's going to be going on? And a lot of that's kind of corrected itself, unfortunately, for the independent scene because of all the contract situations that are taking place. And obviously AEW is giving some people some leeway there, but, you know, that's now. You know, we haven't hit September yet or October yet. The first show is going to be filmed in October. I'm sure they're going to be tightening the reins, certainly by Labor Day and by this All Out 2 show. They're going to have some real ideas with what's going on. I mean, Game Changer Wrestling has announced they're going to say, quote, goodbye for now to Joey Janela. And obviously that was going to be taking place, but it's a reminder here as they have a show called Curtain Call, which is going to be taking place in Asbury Park on September 30th, that, like, some of these guys are going to be disappearing. Apparently they have got Superhuman, the jackass character come to life that does all the ridiculous stunts. They've got him in what will be a cavalcade of colorful personalities that'll end up at that show. But yeah, I mean, times are different. And you know, we're seeing now Wrestle Circus probably shouldn't have come back from what a lot of people are saying. I wasn't very familiar with them. I know we had Jervis Cottonbelly on the show. I think we had Kevin Condren on the show who was involved in it. We had a couple of people on the show to talk about it. But it never became a thing, and unfortunately for them, they're gone now. I don't think it's going to cause anybody to blink except for those people in Austin that are close, that had the ability to travel close to a show, but there's still a ton of stuff out there. The G1's had two shows, and I'll tell you about Jon Moxley. I remember when Dean Ambrose appeared on the Steve Austin podcast, And there were a lot of people that just hammered him. What an awful job he did. You know, Steve Austin gave him the opportunity to cut loose. He gave him the opportunity to talk about himself. And he was just a feminine hygiene product. That's what he was acting like. And I remember sitting there and I'm thinking, I've interviewed Dean Ambrose. I've talked to Dean Ambrose before. It's a pretty real dude when you talk to him. It's like he's got no problem. You know, he's not bashful or shy or anything like that. He just never felt like that was a good place where he could actually, you know, be himself, because he knew he couldn't be himself. He could only be a watered down version of himself. So he was disinterested, didn't care, and he didn't really care that Steve Austin was annoyed by it. He didn't care that Vince McMahon was annoyed by it. Didn't care that Brian Alvarez was annoyed by it. It was just him. And we're starting to see all of that stuff, all those people that knew him in CZW, all those people that knew him behind the scenes, all those people that knew his drive and saw that greatness, and maybe even possibly remember when he was in developmental way before there was a Shield. And he was jawing with Mick Foley, and it was cool. It was a really cool kind of guerrilla thing that they did at a WrestleMania one year, his first year there. It was done very, very well, and that was the guy that a lot of people, they wondered, how is this guy going to function in WWE? How? And there were a lot of people that said, man, he's going to be the breakout star. I never understood that. You got a guy that looks like Roman Reigns, and obviously you know what they've done with him. Seth Rollins, Tyler Black, Colby Lopez, no doubt. I was wondering how a guy like Dean Ambrose was going to fit in the mix, because there's only one Mick Foley, and they're not good with depth of characters. They're just not. We'll see what happens with Bray Wyatt, but we saw what happened the first time around now, didn't we? Not good with it. They weren't going to let him be Jake Roberts 2020. But you know who is? New Japan Pro Wrestling. And he's beyond Jake Roberts 2020. He's Jon Moxley 2020. Absolutely unbelievable. Had a hell of a match with Tetsuya Naito today. I don't even know if it was the best match on the show, because Jay White and Shingo had a banger as well too. But the promo he cut afterwards, the fire he showed, the tag match that he had the day before where he was battling with L.I.J. Oh man, it was something. And he sent a message to the universe today where he had Shota Umino, quote-unquote, cut the promo for him as he stood there and extended middle fingers to anybody out there into the universe that feels as though that's for them and that they should know who they are. And it was awesome. And he has 10 points, he is undefeated, and he is at the top of Block B as Kazuchika Okada, who is undefeated, who is arguably the best pro wrestler in the world, stands on top of the other block. And a lot of people are going, well, you know, you don't need Ibushi and Naito to win this thing, to be involved in the mix. Could we? Could we possibly see Jon Moxley win his block and go to the finals and possibly even win, setting up something for the Tokyo Dome down the line? I don't think so. A lot of people saying, well, who could he lose to? They made it very clear. Jon Moxley's next match is against Toru Yano. And a lot of people are cringing right now. He's going to lose to Toru Yano. I'm sorry. He's losing to Toru Yano. I believe that. And I believe he's going to pick up a couple more L's too, because I think this thing is going to come down to Okada and Naito. And with him beating Naito, you have the opportunity for Tetsuya Naito to try to top him before it's time for him to go to AEW and turn his attention there. And that is a chip that you need for later on. I don't know when they would do that match. I'm trying to think of when the lineup would be, because obviously October is too late, so I got to see what the big show in September is. But I think that's going to be the case, because I still think this is Naito's year. And frankly, with how he looked, and oh my, he delivered a top rope Frankensteiner to Moxley today, where he landed right on his neck, and the elevated, and onto the top of his head, I should say, which of course jammed his neck, and then the elevated Death Rider DDT that Moxley gave him at the end, where again, Naito came crashing down on his neck. It was brutal. It was absolutely brutal. And I got to be honest, if you're not going to pull the trigger right now with Naito as the IWGP champion, or really not right now, but at the Dome, I don't know when you're going to do it. And I refer back to the conversation that we were having on Friday about Tomohiro Ishii. I think it would be, and again, this is just fantasy booking, you know, out the yin-yang, but if Naito wins the title at the Dome, what a better person to transition that belt to than to Tomohiro Ishii. More than Kota Ibushi, more than Will Ospreay, more than Okada again, whatever. I think Naito losing to Ishii would be great. And then you can move from there. But obviously that's just fantasy booking. Good stuff has gone on. Jay White is spectacular. He is a spectacular heel. Shingo is a spectacular heavyweight pro wrestler. And I hope to continue to see him in the mix as a heavyweight for New Japan because he's great. That was day 10. Day 9, not as great, although Lance Archer continued on his run that he's been having. Defeated or lost to Kota Ibushi, but what was a really, really good match. And Okada and Kenta, the main event for that show, was spectacular as well, too. Really an excellent match. Got a little bit of time left when we get back from break, and I'm going to try to pack as much as I can into that. Wrestling Observer Live.
He just holds my arms behind my back, and this kid stands up and punched me full force right in the stomach. This kid attacked me in the middle of this match to save the Jungle Boy.
I guarantee you there's no problem.
Bro.
You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live with Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.
Oh my. Wrestling Observer Live, Mike Sempervivi back here with you. Kento Miyahara, Brian Alvarez, is not. But I still believe he's younger than Zeus. If you are a viewer of All Japan TV, subscriber over there, and haven't had a chance to see it yet, this morning's card that they had, according to Voices of Wrestling, the first half of it, no bueno. I didn't get a chance to see much of the second half, but I got a chance to see the main event, the Triple Crown title defense of Kento Miyahara over Zeus, and it was excellent in that, look, if this wouldn't be 4 stars if it was Ibushi and Ospreay or Tanahashi and Nakamura at their level, but Kento Miyahara, where he is at, and Zeus with what he brings to the table, which is thumping. I mean, they put on a really, really fun match, and that wasn't the only one this weekend. Kato Kiyomiya from NOAH, the young kid there, defended his title against Katsuhiko Nakajima, who's been around for 15 years, and he's only 31 years old. He's just been amazing, and he had a pretty good title match from what I heard this weekend. With those two being involved, I don't know how it can be anything other. Young guys, all of these guys are young, and I have a feeling on one of the shows this week, if I do get a chance at a solo one, maybe even tomorrow, we can look at some of the names across this world under the age of 30 who are awesome. One of those people, Konosuke Takeshita, who has announced that he is looking to spread his wings, at least hinted that way on Twitter. 24 years old, the current DDT champion. He's absolutely awesome. And who knows, maybe he can come over to the States and not only wrestle, but fill in on this show. Because I may need a new co-host. I'm Mike Sempervivi. This is Wrestling Observer Live. At least one of us will talk to you again after a while. Bye-bye.
On this tour, Jon Moxley will close out a New Japan event, getting to speak to the fans here in Nagoya.
Thank you for being here tonight, Nagoya, to witness the moment, because this is the moment. 5-0, 10 points. This is the moment where people who doubted me change their minds. This is your last chance to get on the bandwagon. Seats are filling up fast, and we're about to close the doors. I got a message. A message to all. The obstacles that stand before me in my life beyond this tournament, every opponent, everything. Man, something else. I got a message to the obstacles that stand before me. I will destroy you. I will not be denied. I refuse to lose. I'm willing this to happen. Oh, baby, it's happening. John Moxley is going to win G1 Climax 29.
I love New Japan. Tranquilo, my apologies. I hope you're not hurt. I hope your neck ain't broken. But I told you this wasn't no joke. Shooter, step in. Come on.
Me?
All right, cut the promo. Talk to your fans. You talk to your fans while I'll be here in the background holding up a middle finger to everybody in the universe who deserves one. And if you do, you know who you are. Get him, Shooter.
Yeah.
No, let him know. Talk.
John Moxley.
Will be winner of G1 Climax 29.
Couldn't have said it any better myself. He's a real panty dropper, ain't he? All right, let's get out of here. Shooter!
Thank you.